We begin with breaking news right now at 9. A 7-year-old girl is dead tonight after being shot 6 times at a McDonald's drive-thru in Lawndale.
When Jazlyn Adams was killed, a lot of the attention turned to her father.
Jocelyn's dad, John Tay Adams, was the target.
Police have said he may have been the target.
Many in the city blamed him for his daughter's death, said he should have known better.
The 29-year-old father has a long criminal history.
The car's driver had threatened the child's father before.
The blame is something Jonte Adams struggles with. It started innocently enough. Jonte was trying to be a good dad, give his daughter some joy.
My daughter texted me once she wanted McDonald's.
So he picked up his 7-year-old daughter, Jazlyn, who everyone called Pinky, from Jazlyn's aunt's house.
Says me and my daughter, like, so we get in the car. And her brother's birthday was coming up. So she was helping me plan her brother's birthday and stuff. And she was just telling me, like, everything that we need to do, her friends, who she wanted to come. And that's when we pulled in McDonald's.
In the drive-thru lane, Jonte noticed something that gave him a bad feeling.
By the time we got to the speaker thing, I seen the car come through the exit.
Jonte had spent years in a gang, on hyper alert for danger. And the way the car came in the exit of the parking lot and then came up behind him in the drive-thru line, it just seemed off.
And, like, by me being active and involved in the streets, certain signs I know, like, oh, this ain't good.
Jonte saw the driver's face, and he saw there were 2 other men in the car with him.
The car they was in, they pulled it all the way to the back of my car.
He couldn't back up, and on each side of his car were tall curbs for the drive-thru lanes.
The car that was in front of me was ordering. It seemed like they was ordering for so long. It was a black car in front of me. And it's like, I can't pull forward because I'm going to crash to them.
Jonte was trapped with his daughter beside him. Then he saw one of the guys get out of the car behind him holding a big rifle.
When I seen them get out with the assault rifle, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, this.
The guys in the car opened fire. Jonte hit the gas to hop over the drive-thru curb to get away. But he crashed into a pole.
They were shooting from the back, and one of the bullets from the back came and hit me directly in the spine. My daughter's in the passenger seat. She was saying, Daddy. Like, that's how I knew. Like, when I got shot, it was coming from, at first it was a daddy. You hear these gunshots? And then it was, she seen me get shot, and it was like a daddy. Like, and I'm like, you know, like, I'm trying to, like, play with my steering wheel and stuff like that. But I know, like, man, I'm hitting. Now I kind of go into a panic because I got my daughter. And then they continued to shoot. And as they obliterated the car, then they shot my baby. Like, she probably said Daddy like 3 times. And when I looked, she was just like laying down. But she was already gone. Sometimes I wish I was with my daughter. You know, sometimes it hurts to be here.
Jazlyn's killing affected a lot of the anti-violence workers on the West Side. The guys who work in East Garfield Park responded to the shooting right after it happened. Like Jazlyn's dad, most of those workers had been in gangs. They know the dangers children face every day. It's one of the things that motivates their work. The path leading to Jazlyn's murder, it started when her dad Jonte was just 11. That's when he started to feel himself being pushed out into the streets by the people who were supposed to look out for him. From WBEZ Chicago, I'm Patrick Smith, along with Ceci Mannion. And this is Motive.
They intervene before it's too late, these interrupters. Turn down the temperature. Halt the cycle of retaliation.
I'm like, man, I can make a difference. And I'm beginning to feel like, am I really making a difference?
You could go either way easily. Because the streets here with open arms, no matter what.
There's no life for me around here no more. I'm scared I'm going to get killed. And this time they're going to shoot me in my head.
Episode 4, Getting In and Getting Out. Ceci, do you remember when Jazlyn Adams was killed?
Yes, I was actually in the office.
What do you remember about it?
Just that there was somebody drove up and lit up into the car, shot into the car.
And the reason we're talking about her in this episode is not because her killing is unique, because unfortunately, you know, it's not like every day, but we get, children get shot in Chicago. children die in Chicago because of the violence. But really, her shooting, it sort of stands as an example. It does happen so often. It's sort of this example of one of the byproducts of all the gun violence we have here. As I was in East Garfield Park with the outreach workers there, this shooting, the Jazlyn Adams killing, just kept coming up. I would ask sort of, what's your worst moment? I know it's a really rude question, but I would ask people, what's your worst moment in this job? And they would bring that up when that little girl got killed at McDonald's. We were in the office one day, and Fats and his supervisor, Vernell, they had this disagreement about whether Jonte Adams, who's Jazlyn's dad, whether or not he should be blamed for his daughter's killing.
I'm from the streets. I know the game. I know. I would never put my kid in the car with me knowing if I've been into it with somebody or just me being in the streets, period. You know, it's like you would think he would know better, but he was a father. He loved his kids, and the little girl wanted to go to McDonald's, so he had to be a father and take his kid to McDonald's.
So my mind was kind of, I was angry about that whole situation because I was disturbed about the fact that why would you have your daughter in your car with you when you know you're into it with somebody? You know what I'm saying? That hurted me, man, that he would be this naive to put his child in the car when you know somebody at you and you at somebody.
I don't think it's his fault. You ain't expecting anybody to drive up on you like that.
You have been both a gang member and a mother before at the same time, right?
Yes.
How did you think about your children's safety?
I didn't think.
You didn't?
You don't think. But as you get older, I could have put my kids in situations. I could have lost one of my kids. And whose fault would it have been? My own. For putting my kid in that situation. My kids were with me. The car's with me. As I was out there on the block sometimes. I was stupid. Very, very stupid. I'm just blessed that nothing happened to my kids.
So I know you said you don't blame Jonte.
No.
Jazlyn's dad. But a lot of people did.
It could have happened anywhere, though. It could have happened anywhere. I mean, so does that mean because he's into it with somebody, he can't come outside the house? He got to stay in his house?
I mean, that's what Vernell is saying, basically. I mean, a lot of people were blaming Jonte. Like, he knew people were out to get him. And people like Vernell, they said he should have known the risks.
Everybody knows the risks, but does that mean you got to be locked up in your house?
Well, and that's basically what Fat said.
And it's like, okay, just because I'm coming from the streets, I can't take my daughter to McDonald's to feed her. You know what I mean? And if I'm not there, it's like, oh, it's a deadbeat dad. Or if she was outside playing and got killed, like, where was the parents at? Why was she out? It hurt me more that the father, he was just trying to be a father at this moment.
You're damned if you do.
You're damned if you don't.
As a gang member, Jonte knew he had enemies. But after his daughter was murdered, he wanted to stop the cycle of violence. That turned even his own friends against him. It's a symbol of Chicago's unrelenting culture of violence. The people who are in it are really in it. As Jonte himself says, it's almost impossible to see another perspective. That's what Ceci, Fats, and the city's other anti-violence workers are up against. There are so many invisible forces lined up to help perpetuate a cycle that ends childhoods, either through accidental but inevitable deaths, or by pulling kids on the verge of adolescence into gangs. Jonte Adams is in a much better place now than he was in the weeks and months after his daughter's murder. He's been in therapy.
It honestly helped me understand how I grew up, things that I missed out. Like a lot of us miss a lot of lessons, like life lessons, conversations about what not to do. Or, you know, I come up in a one-parent home. Father was incarcerated and things like that. So my counseling and therapy has really just helped me understand me and what I come from.
He's 31 now, tall and lanky with big, curious eyes. He grew up just off Chicago Avenue, a street with a reputation for heroin dealing and violence on the West Side.
Yeah, it's a real rough area due to the fact every the whole Chicago rough, when you really think about it, like standing, like it's like every corner you turn, you in a territory or a gang, whether it's West Humboldt Park, Little Village, Austin, North Lawndale.
Jonte was really young when he says he started feeling pressure from his own family to be out in the streets, acting tough and earning money.
My father ran and hustled on the same block I hustled on. My father got shot on the exact same block I got shot on. So, you know, it's some things are inherited. Some people inherit a good thing. Some people inherit the bad thing. You know, I inherited something my father was already a part of. I believe around like 11, I started feeling pressure. That's when I realized, like, man, where my father at? Like, you know, like, everybody made their best to make sure that I was tough, I was bad. Like,
nah. You were going to be the man of the
family. Yeah, like, you're going to be the man of the family. So that probably was the only pressure I felt.
With his father in prison, Jonte started paying more attention to the men hustling on the block where he lived.
I wasn't out there yet, but I wanted to know. Like, I wanted to know what was going on. And people acknowledged me, like, was trying to basically give me, like, the streets. Like, man, you could come out here, you could do this, you could make all this money, like, you know.
So when were you first kind of out there? How old were you?
I could say probably, like, 15.
Jonte says when he was a teenager, the gang life was fun. But then, when he became an adult, the quick trips to juvenile jail turned into real time behind bars.
Yeah, I spent all my 20s in jail. So I lost 10 years of my life to being in and out of jail.
What were you going away for?
Drugs, all drugs. Like, I always went away for selling drugs.
Jonte was actually locked up when Jaslyn was born. He met her in the visiting area at the Cook County Jail, the big jail in Chicago. He says after that first meeting, he went back to his cell and cried. Eventually, he was forced to pull back from the gang after he was shot in the neck and the arm. It was so bad, he still can't really use his arm. The injury meant he stopped getting arrested and was around a lot more for Jaslyn's early years than he had been for her older brother. What was she like? What are some of your favorite memories of her?
Just being so outspoken, putting me in my place. That's really what I miss. Her putting me in my place. She was the one that made me be a father. I actually learned how to parent through her. I learned how to develop patience through her. She made me sit with her. You know, like, I had to learn through her, like, Daddy, come get me. Pick me up. Do this for me. We got a field trip. I need you here. My graduation. Because around the time she's getting older, I'm not going back and forth to jail anymore. You know what I'm saying? So now I'm actually able to spend time with her. So it was like she was so demanding, and that's what I missed the most. Like, she was in control. Hey.
Hey. Hey. Jonte was pulling back from the gang, but he wasn't all the way out. Far from it. You ain't no killer. You a pussy. You gon' run from confrontations. Fuck that status. Fuck the Moes. I don't need no ballot. He may not have been out on the street hustling and gangbanging much anymore, but he was still making music about it. Constipation. Lil' Wop get you gone for free. Still give them 10 with your location. Gone for murder. We ain't tripping because that shit just allegations. Jonte was a drill rapper by the name of Tilla. Drill first got popular in the early 2010s. Chief Keef is probably its best-known artist. Drill has since spread to other cities and countries. The lyrics revel in relentless, remorseless violence. Music videos almost always feature rappers and their friends holding and pointing guns. Today, Jonte laments drill culture and his role in it, but at the time, his music and music videos put him at the center of a violent rivalry. The last video Jonte made, posted 6 months before the shooting, shows him mocking a rival gang.
Now, I'm not saying that I wasn't running and still making diss songs, and I was still out here, like, fire, like, adding fuel to flame, you know, making people mad, things that I was saying, and even, like I say, hanging with people, certain people who you know is still moving, like, in a certain way, still out here gangbanging or doing whatever.
It was those songs and videos that put a target on Jonte's back, a target he was still wearing the day he took Jaslyn to McDonald's. But Jonte says he wasn't thinking about any of that when he was with his daughter.
I wasn't looking at it like nobody's going to stop me. Or I wasn't looking at it like, you know, like the other way around, like it can't happen. It's just like when I was with her, I was like just so lost. Like I was lost with her. Like it was like when I'm with her, I'm in my own world.
Jonte spent 2 days in the hospital after the shooting at McDonald's. The day after he got out of the hospital, he went to a vigil for Jaslyn.
Daddy. Last words. Daddy. A panicking daddy. I see my daughter face down in my car. I will never forget those moments. I want my daughter's killers locked up.
The crowd at the vigil released balloons in Jaslyn's memory. Dozens of little prayers sent floating up toward heaven. After the emotional vigil, Jonte checked into a hotel in Lombard, a suburb west of Chicago. He got a room on the third floor with two queen beds and a TV mounted on the wall. Mentally, he just couldn't go straight back to his old neighborhood. And he didn't think it was physically safe either. The guys from Jonte's block drove the 20 miles out to see him. They were pushing him to respond to the tragedy with righteous vengeance.
Friends was asking me, like, okay, look, what we gonna do? This is what we gonna do. And they telling me, like, look, this is what we gonna do.
Jonte's friends were saying, it's time to go shoot up the gang that did this. Answer blood with blood.
And I'm like, no. I'm telling them, like, y'all, go be with y'all kids, because at the end of the day, I can't have it on my conscience if something happened to y'all and then y'all get took away from y'all kids because of an angry decision I made about my daughter. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, somebody got to try to stop it, you know. But this was my breaking point, but they didn't understand it.
During the visit, Jonte realized his old friends from the block were trying to be supportive, but they didn't know how to help him grieve or even how to properly grieve themselves. And they weren't listening to him as he begged them to put the guns down and go be with their kids. They had come to the hotel to send a simple message. Stop talking about the murder in public and do not cooperate with police.
I had did the news thing, and they was upset about that. They like, get off the news. No, don't do that. Don't do that. People gonna think you snitching. They really were just upset about how I was going about the situation. Like, that's what made me understand that we was living wrong, because nobody understood the matter at hand that a child did. It was more like, no, we ain't doing it like that. We finna slide. That's more what it was. And to me, I'm like, well, it's my daughter. Like, you know, it's so many children out here. And that was my main thing. I didn't want my daughter to be just another unsolved gun violence case.
When Jonte's friends realized he couldn't be persuaded, they turned on him.
They won't understand, and then looks up, look down, like they just stopped talking to me, stopped taking my texts. Just saying a whole bunch of hurtful stuff.
But he was steadfast. Police came to see him at that same hotel room.
I met with the detectives, too, at the Lombard Hotel. They showed me the camera footage. You know, they sat down, they showed me the pictures of the guys.
Jonte identified the alleged attackers, and all three men that he says killed Jaslyn are now facing murder charges. The tragedy hangs over his whole life. Jonte has moved from his old home. He feels like a target, both for his old opposition and his former friends.
I don't want my nieces in the cars with me. I don't want to be in nobody's cars if it ain't mine, because I don't want to risk nobody getting another innocent bystander getting hurt. It's definitely like hard to live like that. And then some people just want to like be around you, but they can't. And it's the same thing. Like, this is gonna be the rest of my life. You know, like, is everybody gonna look at me like a target? Is I'm ever gonna be comfortable in my own skin again?
Despite the fear, the alienation, Jonte has dedicated his life to preserving his daughter's memory and building a legacy for her in death. He speaks frequently about the tragedy, hopeful it will discourage others from violence that puts children at risk.
Love you, baby. Love you, baby.
And he's back to making music again, this time songs with a positive message, like a memorial to his daughter.
Why do love start off so good, but in the end turned out so painful? 7 years I got to know you, for them few years I am grateful. Ain't questioning God, but I question God the day you left, like why he take you. Got me wanna have another child, and again I don't, cause I can't remake you. Change my life so much, I love you, just wanna touch and tell you thank you most I ever.
It had to take him to lose his child, but he did the right thing.
I was a little surprised his friends were so resistant to him cooperating with police. You know, they're saying, stop talking to cops, stop going on the news talking about justice. We're going to go back and we're going to shoot the guys who did this. And I was surprised because it's like his 7-year-old daughter got killed, but they still are like, no, no snitching. We're going after these guys. What? Am I wrong to be surprised?
No.
Are you surprised?
No.
Why not?
I think if you would have asked me this a couple years, well, not a couple, a while back, I think I would agree. Come on. They took one of ours. Let's go. But now seeing all these families and just being a victim of it as well, he did the right thing. The father did the right thing by saying, hey, look, fall back.
But you think it's almost obvious that, of course, his friends are going to say, let's go.
Yeah.
Why?
It's just the way it is, Patrick.
I think I started to get a sense of what a brave choice he was making when I talked with those anti-violence workers, the same guys that were talking about how tragic it was. I talked to them, Vernell and Fats, about Jonte's decision to cooperate with police. I want to play a little bit of how they responded.
This world we're living in now is a cruel, judgmental place. And some people just don't turn the other cheek on that stuff like that, snitching in the hood, you know. And I don't think it's really snitching when it comes to babies, because they innocent to this. They didn't sign up for this, you know. We signed up for that. The kids didn't sign up for that. So you got to look at it from all angles, you know. But me, I don't wish jail on nobody.
Would you not? I feel horrible even trying to even putting a hypothetical like that. But if you were in his shoes back in the day, would you have cooperated with police, you think?
No.
You nope. said no to?
No, of course.
Nope. I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have.
Not in no circumstances.
But if you were sitting there like, this person killed my baby, and they're not turning themselves
turn
in.
Turn my call.
All right. In case you missed it at the end of that tape of Fats and Vernell, when I'm asking, like, you know, if this happened to you, what would you do? And that was Vernell told me to turn the mic off.
I can imagine.
These questions. What you do when a loved one gets killed. When vengeance is appropriate. Whether it's ever okay to cooperate with police. They are extremely sensitive. Even for people who are working to stop retaliation. When I asked outreach workers in Garfield Park about Jonte's decision to identify the shooters instead of seeking street justice, I was expecting universal celebration. But that's not what I got. I keep coming back to what Fats said. We signed up for this. I guess in some ways it's technically true, but also they were so young when they did sign up. Jonte joined a gang when he was 15. Still just a boy. His story is tragic and upsetting, but it's not unique. Almost every current or former gang member I've spoken to describes being pulled out to the streets at a young age, usually right before starting high school. And often, before joining up, they suffer some sort of trauma that pushes them out of their homes, looking for somewhere else to belong. Take Fats. He was surrounded by gangs on the city's west side. And just like Jonte, it was his family that gave him the first push out to the streets. He guesses he was about 12 or 13.
I had a big brother, so he was selling a little drugs here and there. He really wasn't. He was mostly a car thief. But when he hustled a little bit. And he was hustling out of our back door. And sometimes when he'd go out to steal cars, he'd be like, if somebody knock on the door, sell him this. So he kind of introduced me to it.
That went on for a couple years, until Fats was 15.
My mom had a car accident, and I seen her in the hospital. And when I saw her, I'm like, oh, no. It just, everything clicked in my head so fast. I'm like, I don't have nobody to take care of me. Because my father had split. My brothers, they barely taking care of themselves because they still with my mother, you know. I was like, if
my mother don't get out this hospital, who's going to take care of me? So I knew then I had to man up and do something to take care of myself. And the fastest way to try and get something was me to get out and hustle. So that's what really drove me to hustling.
To get started, Fats went to the guys who had been supplying his brother drugs.
I went to some people and, you know, the same people he was messing with, and got what I wanted. He was like, "You sure?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm sure. I need some money."
Did you get money together, or did they give it to you sort of on consignment?
On consignment. You know, I didn't have the money to pay for anything.
Fats was 15 years old. I wouldn't trust a 15-year-old with anything. But these dealers, they were willing to front the high school freshman a big bag of powder cocaine.
It was just me. I was, you know, doing my thing. And then some older guys came like, who shit you got? I'm like, mine. They like, oh, no, you can't do that. You got to come on in with us or something. Then I started working with some people. And, you know, it was pretty good.
As it got bigger, it got more serious, more dangerous. Fats was stabbed. He got shot in the neck. He says he picked up a lot of criminal cases. Gun possession, drug dealing. Only once did he actually do serious time in prison. Fats' decision about 6 years ago to finally get out of the gang, stop drug dealing, stop hustling, it wasn't prompted by anything nearly as dramatic as the tragedy that shook Jonte Adams. Instead, his story of getting out shows just how big of a role poverty plays in people staying in gangs, and how little it can take to send someone on another path. For Fats, all it took was a crappy used car. Over the years, Fats had become close friends with the son of a man who owned the liquor store in his neighborhood.
This was a guy, you know, I met through his father, and when I got out of jail, I called him. He said, "What's going on? What you doing?" I say, "I'm doing nothing. I'm in the house, man, bored." He said, "You not working yet?" I'm like, "No. I'm finna come buy you a car. And you gonna go to work tonight." I said, "Where I'm gonna go to work at?" "You gonna go deliver pizza." I said, "Okay, come get me." Came and got me. Bought me a car. I started delivering pizza for one of his friends.
Most of the money Fats made selling drugs, he had spent fast. Whatever he had saved had gone to paying for lawyers and bail. So that used car and the job delivering pizzas, it was everything to Fats. It was the turning point, the leg up he needed to leave hustling behind and go straight.
And no guy that I hustle with or any of that called me, but if I would have called them and say I'm ready to hustle, I'd have had the doors open to anything. But me sitting at home saying I'm bored and frustrated, I can't get a job, he called me and said, "I'm going to go buy you a car." And he left the car in his own name until I was able to switch the car over. He said, "You're going to work tonight." And I went to work.
A used car wouldn't do it for everyone. Probably not for younger guys enjoying the fast cash of drug dealing and the thrill of gangbanging. But these stories, it's clear it really wouldn't take much to get people to choose something else. Imagine if 15-year-old Fats hadn't felt the panic of how he'd survive, or if Jonte Adams, at the same age, didn't feel the pressure to be the man of the house. Fats says for kids like Jonte and him, they just need to be given a real chance.
Being black as a kid, you gotta be exceptional. They want you to be all the way up here, but you can't be. Everybody can't be that. They wasn't investing in C students, D students. They wasn't investing in me.
I can hear Fats' frustration and regret. He was just a normal kid. He got in trouble. He goofed off in class. He skipped his homework sometimes. Most places, that's just what we expect of young people. But in Fats' world, where there wasn't nearly enough opportunity to go around, it meant Fats got put into a bucket with most of the other kids he grew up with. Another poor kid on his way to becoming part of the problem. Not worth investing in.
Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
Sessie's back at Joey's house to check on his progress. It's been 2 months since Joey's shooting, and his physical recovery from the 11 bullets is progressing on schedule. Like usual, Sessie carries her police scanner, listening for possible shootings as she approaches the house. As always, clad in black leggings and a black t-shirt. She's here to check on Joey, but her focus is Joey's 14-year-old son, Mateo. He's on the cusp of high school, that perilous time for so many Chicago kids. When I met Mateo on my first visit with Sessie, the boy was basically hiding out in the house, helping care for his dad. At the time, he told me he was probably the next target. Now, 2 months later, Mateo's doing everything he can to remove himself. He says he's basically never home.
But I've been, like, going outside now since, like, since summer's going away little by little. I call my friends, like, hey, let's go outside and hoop for a bit, then just come back.
And do you feel nervous going out?
I mean, kind of, but not really. Because I'm, like, with a group of friends.
This has Sessie worried, both that Mateo could be shot by the people who shot Joey, or that his desire to find safety in numbers could make him particularly susceptible to the allure of a gang. Mateo was about the age Fats and Jonte were when they first joined up. For Jonte, his dad being locked up helped push him out to the streets. Fats started dealing drugs when his mom got hurt in a car accident. Now, Mateo's dad is seriously wounded. It's turned the family upside down and shaken the young man's sense of self and security. He's exceptionally vulnerable. Sessie is desperate to keep Mateo from going down the path that she and Joey and Fats and Jonte all followed.
He's looking for outlets, trying to find a wrong crowd, hanging out, drinking, smoking, the gang life.
Crossing that line that we're not trying to have him cross, so we're trying to get to him before he crosses that line.
That's next time on Motive. Motive is a production of WBEZ Chicago. I'm Patrick Smith. Marie Mendoza is our producer. Our editor is Rob Wildebor. Our executive producer is Kevin Dawson. Tracy Brown is our chief content officer. Our story consultant is Cecilia Mannion. Additional help from Natalie Moore, Kate Cahan, Shannon Heffernan, Anna Sevchinka, and Joe Dassault. Music from Jeff Else, Blue Dot Sessions, and Audio Network.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.